Welcome to Parenting Teens with Dr. Cam, the podcast dedicated to helping you tackle the challenges of parenting teenagers without the drama. I'm your host, Dr. Cam. Let's get on with the show. Ever wonder why your once bright and enthusiastic child seems constantly stressed, overwhelmed, and down on themselves? You're not alone. Studies show nearly 80% of teenagers experience negative self-talk, impacting their confidence, academic performance, and overall well-being. In this episode, we dive deep with school psychologist and teen coach Natalie Burrell to explore strategies to help your teen silence their inner critic and cultivate a growth mindset for success. Natalie, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much. It's an honor to be here.
It's great to have you. So tell us a little bit quick story. What inspired you to start working with teenagers and helping them just with life success?
Well, I have been a school psychologist for 17 years. And while I love that work and I work with amazing people, what I've realized is that when you work in public education, there is a lot of red tape and a lot of hoops that have to be jumped through in order to get a student what it is that they need. And so about 7 years ago, I started doing a very official Google search on what else can I do with my school psychology degree, because I felt like I wasn't having the type of long-lasting impact that I wanted to have on teenagers. And that's how I discovered the field of academic life coaching. And it was really just this beautiful blend of education and psychology and life coaching. And I instantly fell in love with it because it lets a student have the skills that they need to be successful, both in the classroom and in life. And sometimes we don't teach those things necessarily in schools. And so that's what really spoke to me about this field. So I started the company 7 years ago and used to be just me, but now there's a team of 15 of us that all have different areas of expertise and backgrounds and a different type of teenager that we really click well with. And so I get to play matchmaker when I talk to families and connect them with a coach that is just really going to meet their students' needs and be a great match as far as personality. So that's the work that I'm doing now, and I just absolutely love it.
I love it. So let's talk about a little bit, what do you see that comes into your coaching practice? Mm-hmm. What are kind of some of the biggest obstacles kids are facing when it comes to them just feeling successful and being able to succeed?
Yeah, great question. So the first thing that comes to my mind is that a lot of parents come to me for support with their teenagers' time management skills. Mm. So balancing all of the things that they have to do in school as far as their assignments or upcoming tests and quizzes, knowing what is due when and kind of managing all of that, but also using their time effectively and efficiently. So time management is probably the most common things that parents initially reach out to me for. But it's interesting because when I have a conversation with a parent and we start talking about time management, inevitably what also comes up is my teenager needs some more confidence. They need more motivation. You know, the time management and the study skills, those are all, you know, tangible things that we can teach to help you be successful in school. But it's interesting because there's always this underlying question about their confidence, and that's half the battle as well.
I love that you brought that up because I agree. So many times we're focused on the tangible little skill, like the time management and the focus, when no matter how many skills we give them for that, if we're not addressing the underlying lack of self-confidence to be able to do those skills, they don't end up tackling them well. They just end up feeling bad about themselves for not having those skills.
Absolutely. And it's interesting. That's why a lot of strategy-only programs don't work. Yeah. So for example, I talk to a lot of parents that say, we've tried executive functioning coaching. We tried to have somebody help him learn how to use a planner, but it didn't stick. And that's because we haven't worked on the foundation yet, which is their confidence, their belief about themselves, and the importance of why learning those skills is so important.
Yeah. So let's talk a little bit about why that self-confidence is it's just not there right now. And I see this in a lot of kids. And I think the first thing parents will turn to is, oh, it's social media. Oh, it's social media. What are your thoughts on why kids are struggling with self-confidence right now?
I mean, I think social media is absolutely a factor. You know, when I was in high school, I got to go home and tune out the rest of the world. I didn't know what everybody else was doing. And of course, on social media, we're seeing a highlight reel of everybody else's accomplishments, right? So I do think social media is a factor, but I think the common denominator is that there's a lot of comparison mm-hmm. happening, whether that's on social media or sitting in a classroom. You know, I have students that will get a 98 on a test and then be upset that the person next to them got 100% because there's that instant comparison of they're smarter than me, or they'll even make it mean something that doesn't make sense, like they're going to get into college and I'm not. So there's this constant comparison either in the classroom or on social media or even on an athletic field, you know, where we're always seeing the accomplishments of other people and comparing ourselves against that.
Yeah. And there's such a black and white thinking that it's not, oh, they got 2 points more, we're both smart. It's they're smart, I must be dumb. So it's like an extreme comparison where they keep telling themselves this over and over and over again. Now, the thing, I was just talking to a client before this, and we were talking about the impact of social media. And one of the things, I want to get your take on this, one of the things that I keep seeing is it's not the direct impact of social media on kids. It's actually the impact on parents on kids, because as parents, we're seeing social media where everyone's posting all the successes that their kids have and how great their kids are doing. And we're feeling pressured as parents that our kids need to live up to that. So we're now pushing down those comparisons onto our kids and feeling like our kids need to meet those expectations too. What do you think of that?
I 100% agree with that. I have little guys at home, and I already feel a sense of comparison when I hear about others' accomplishments. And now my little guys, it's about soccer and what team they're on and who started. And there is, I have to admit, there's that little pressure to keep up or to be equal to or even to be better than. And so I absolutely understand, you know, the parents that I'm speaking with, they're concerned about the pressure of where their teen got into college, because there is like a sense of pride, a sense of clout mm-hmm. or accomplishment that my child got into, you know, said college. And there is that pressure there. It's very real.
Oh, yeah. So now we're kind of modeling that comparison, because that's how we grew up too. And we're not immune to it by any means. And now we're seeing our kids who have these negative mindsets, and we're like, I don't understand where this came from. I keep mm-hmm. telling them, and I hear parents saying this all the time, I keep telling them that it doesn't matter, that their grades don't matter, that whether they are the best or not doesn't matter, but my kid believes it does. They're putting the pressure on themselves. Explain to me where that comes from.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting because that negative voice that we all have, or that inner critic, it is not logical. Yeah. It is a very illogical way of thinking. So I will often hear students say things that absolutely are not true. You know, the things that their negative voice or their inner critic tells them, it's not the truth. It's a story that they're telling themselves. And part of the work that has to be done if we're going to shift a teenager's mindset and their beliefs about themselves and lower the volume on this inner critic is that they have to first realize that that voice is not logical, and realize that, in fact, what they're telling themselves is a story. And sometimes what they're telling themselves is something that they wouldn't even say to their best friend because it's so harsh.
Yeah. So here's where we struggle with. So parents are like, okay, I keep telling them they're great. I keep telling them they're smart. We're celebrating their A's. Yes. I keep trying to tell them and they're not listening to me. They don't believe me. They roll their eyes at me. How do I help them change this negative self-talk? What do we need to do?
Yeah. I mean, as a parent, you're probably saying all of the right things, the encouraging things, the things that you want to say to boost that self-esteem and help them see all of the amazing things that there are, you know, in their teenager. But the problem is you have to say that because you're their parent, right? Sometimes it has to come from another voice, whether that is a teacher, a family mentor, a coach, an accountability partner, another student. It almost necessarily doesn't matter who it is,
of course you want to keep saying those things as a parent. And I think it's great to continue. I would never recommend stopping, but I think that has to come from a different voice in order for your teenager to believe it and internalize it.
Yeah. The other thing, I learned a little trick with my daughter. She's 18 now, but I always liked having her overhear me say something positive about her to somebody else, which almost gave me another voice.
It
added credibility because she's like, yeah, you have to say it to me, but man, if I overhear you saying it to somebody else, then that must be true and you must really think that. And I use that trick a lot.
It's a good one. I like that.
I know it works. So I think the other thing is, and I want to help parents realize that sometimes we send mixed messages. So explain to us, like we will say directly to them, you're smart, we believe you, all of these things, but we counteract it with some of the other messages or behaviors that we do. Can you kind of bring light to some of the things that we might be saying or doing that are undermining our attempts to give them more self-confidence? Mm-hmm.
Two things come to mind. The first one is that I think we have to be very careful with our language and the words that we use because teenagers are very perceptive and they pick up on nuances in your tone and the specific words that you say. So for example, to me, grades do matter. That's a fact. You know, they matter in terms of getting you into a college. They matter in terms of how good you feel about yourself. They matter in terms of how much you actually internalize the content and learn the content that you're being taught. But grades don't define you or your importance or your intelligence. So I think that language has to be really on point. We have to be careful with the words that we use. Because if I say to somebody, grades don't matter, if I say that to one of my students, then why am I working so hard to teach them how to get good grades? But if I say, sure, grades matter, but you getting a poor grade on a math test does not mean you're stupid. It does not mean you're bad at math. It does not mean you're not getting into college. So that's the first thing. I think we have to be really careful about the words that we use and the way that we describe things. And then the second thing is I think we have to model what it is that we mean. So for example, you know, if you can talk about like healthy eating, it's so important. Like if we're saying to our kids, like, make sure you're getting your fruits and veggies, drink your water, don't have, you know, that 45 grams of sugar Starbucks drink before school, but then we go and we do the same thing.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. It's counterintuitive. It's like, well, you're saying one thing, but you're behaving another way. And I mean, confession, of course, I drink Starbucks drinks with a ton of sugar.
Oh, ditto.
And I tell my children not to, but it's something to be conscious of if we're saying one thing and we're kind of modeling or giving an example of the opposite.
Yeah, that's a big one. I see that with tech use. I see that just how we manage our own emotions. Like you can't get angry, but I'm getting angry.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of conflict, right? And discrepancies between that. So help us now. We have a teenager and suddenly everything we say is like, I'm sorry. Or I'm just dumb. Or and they're constantly talking negative about themselves. How do we as parents start addressing that?
Yeah. You know, the first thing that I do when I'm talking with teenagers about their inner critic is to recognize that it is absolutely normal. It's an absolutely normal part of being a human, is to be critical of yourself or to not feel confident in certain areas of your life. So the first thing is to normalize it and to say, you know, everybody has an inner critic. It's not about not having one, because that's not reality. It's about how do we recognize when it happens and what do we do with that voice to kind of turn down the volume. That's the important part. How do we recover from it? So I think, you know, another step after you acknowledge that it is completely normal is to really figure out when it tends to happen and start recognizing that. So does it always happen in a testing situation? Or does it typically happen on the basketball court or when you're around new people? When does it start to happen? So start to recognize the patterns there and then start to get very specific about what it says. So does your inner critic tell you that you're stupid? Does your inner critic tell you that you're not pretty enough? Whatever it is, we need to really understand the words
that your inner critic is using. Because from there, what we can do is reframe those words or change the words. So for example, I had a group coaching session just this past Monday where we were talking about the things our inner critic says to us. And I have a very bright boy in the group by the name of Andrew. He's taking AP classes, but he said that his inner critic tells him when he walks into AP bio, "Why don't you know this stuff already? You should know this already." Now, what an illogical thought, right? He hasn't been taught the material yet. He's just walking into class to learn it. But that's what his inner critic says. And we've already touched on the fact that the inner critic is not logical. So we worked on reframing that thought. So reframing and replacing. So we switched, "You are so stupid. How do you not know this yet?" to "You're exactly where you're supposed to be. You're smart. You're in this class just like everybody else. And nobody knows the material yet because it hasn't been taught." What his inner critic was saying was not the truth. It was a story that he was telling himself. So we reframe those thoughts. And then we also talk about what would happen if that story you were telling yourself wasn't true. So Andrew, if you were smart enough to be in that class, you were right where you were supposed to be because no one has learned the material yet, then what's possible for you? Or how do you approach that class differently? Mm-hmm. And he was saying that he'd probably feel a little bit better about himself and even pay a little more attention. So yeah, it's all about normalizing it, recognizing when it happens, knowing what your inner critic says, and then reframing it so that it changes your behavior.
That's fantastic. And it's a step-by-step that parents can do too. So it's, mm-hmm, and even sharing with your kids what your inner critic is telling you and modeling, reframing it for them, because we all have very loud, obnoxious inner critics, right?
It's so true.
Yeah, it really is, right? So work, so that is a good way to normalize it. And I think, so if we do it once, will this fix the problem?
No. Oh, absolutely not.
What do we need to do?
No. I mean, it's a repetitive thing. It's like planting a seed. You have to keep planting the seeds. Like a strong oak takes a long time to grow, right? Yeah. We have to keep planting those seeds, even if it feels like they're not listening to you or they're tuning you out or they give you feedback or resistance to it. It doesn't matter. You still have to plant the seed. You still have to model it. Because now if mom says it and then somebody else around me says it, okay, now it must be true, right? But it has to come from several different places in order for that to stick. So parents keep saying it. Hopefully we can, you know, shift that mindset of your teenager. But then when they also hear it from other people, teachers, athletic coaches, mentors, then it starts to click like, oh, maybe that is true.
Right. And I like, because I think a lot of times the way we want to approach it is we just say, oh, that's not true. Don't think that. You're this. And the reason that doesn't work, tell us why that doesn't work.
It doesn't work because you have to say that as their parent. I mean, there's no, you just have to say that. Yeah. You're the parent. Yeah, that's your job to build them up.
It's not changing their belief system either. Yeah. I think a lot of times what we're doing is just saying, we're not listening to you. We don't get it. We don't know anything. If we're just brushing over that belief rather, mm-hmm, than trying to dig in and understand that belief using the tools that you just gave us.
Yeah,
right? Exactly. So now we're helping them reframe it, which is exactly the skill they need to do, rather than just telling them to ignore it, which they're not going to do.
You're right.
But that is such the key skill right there, is we're building that. Now, what can we do as parents? And we're talking about, so we see a grade and their grades are not they're not doing well, right? Their grades are just kind of plummeting. How do we talk to them about that in a way that encourages this growth mindset and, mm-hmm, this like feeling of hopefulness that things can change, rather than in a way that makes them, feeds into their negative critic that they're dumb? And I think we need to be very mindful of that. So how do parents address that? Hey parents, feeling overwhelmed? You don't have to do this alone. Join the Thriving Parent Academy, where community support is everything. Member Tracy said, "We all developed at an exponential rate together." And Carrie admitted, "I didn't think I needed this, but it's a life game changer." Don't wait. Join us at thrivingparent.org and use promo code THRIVE20 for 20% off your membership. Let's thrive together.
The first thing that comes to my mind is storytelling.
I think it's really great to tell stories of either your own life or somebody you know, or even a famous person's story who overcame setbacks or had something difficult and overcame that. You know, storytelling is so helpful in that way because they start to relate to what is happening and it takes the spotlight off of them. Like it's somebody else's issue that they're learning about, but it relates to them, right? Yeah. So I think storytelling in any way, shape, or form, whether it's through movies, whether it's, hey, I heard this podcast episode, I thought you might like it, here's the link, whatever it may be, sharing stories, I think is the first one. But then the other thing is to, if your teenager is willing to have a conversation with you about this, we can talk about two paths. And what I mean by that is you can take a path where we just let it go. Like it is what it is. We're not going to, you know, you got a bad grade, let's move on. And then talk about what happens on that path. Like fast forward a little bit. What happens if we just let this go? But then we can also talk about the second path, which is how do we get help for this? Or how do we use a resource? Or how do we shift our mindset? How do we try a strategy we haven't used before? And if we do that, what does the path look like down the road? So kind of comparing, you know, if we just stay stuck, this is what will happen. And if we take action, this is what will happen. So yeah. those two strategies are the first two things that came to mind.
Yeah. How do we present the second strategy? Obviously, it seems to be the more productive one. How do we approach that strategy without our kids getting defensive or feeling like we think that they need help and that they're broken? Because kids get very resistant the second they feel like we're pointing out a flaw.
Yeah. The first thing is the timing has to be right. I wouldn't do it in the heat of the moment, right when they find out the grade. The second thing is I find conversations in the car are great because they typically can't escape. and then the third thing that comes to mind is that you can write a letter. You can write an email. There doesn't have to necessarily be a face-to-face conversation. Is that ideal? Yeah, of course. But I say the same thing to kids that are nervous to talk to their teachers. Like, you can write them an email. You can write them a note. Like, if there's a way to approach this person that's more comfortable for you, do that. And it's kind of the same when you're having a conversation with your teenager. If you think, you know there's going to be a conflict when you bring this up, maybe you go about it in a different format. Maybe you write them an email, you leave them a letter, whatever it may be. So you're still getting your words out, but there doesn't have to be that back and forth conversation that might not go the way that you hope it goes.
Yeah, I like that. And I'm going to throw in, even people might not like this, but even running it through ChatGPT, because what I've noticed is if I write something and I'm very emotional and heated and negative, ChatGPT will immediately take that out of it and make it a lot more kind and productive. And I'm like, oh, thank you. So there's always the chance of being able to go, okay, how do I say this in a way that's not quite as like, rah?
Yes, that's great.
It helps me do that. So I think now we're having conversations with our kids, and I know it's very difficult. A lot of times kids are very reluctant to open up to their parents. So having a trusted adult, right, as someone else that they can turn to, how do parents help kids find these trusted adults that parents can also trust?
Mm-hmm. You know, I think it's using your village. Like it's using the people around you. You know, as my kids get older, I'm really realizing that old saying of it takes a village is so true. Mm-hmm. Because you have to look at the people that you already know, like, and trust first to me. If there's nobody in that circle of love that you feel like could be, you know, a mentor or a connection with your teen, look to the school first and foremost. I mean, those are the people that see them the most, probably even more than you as parents sometimes. Look to the school, whether it be a guidance counselor or a coach of some kind through school. Sometimes the schools even have counseling services, but I would go to your school first. After looking at your own circle of love, if there's nothing there, I would start doing a Google search. I would start looking for, you know, who are people that are experts in the areas where my teen needs support, whether that's study skills or executive functioning, or whether it's, you know, confidence, whatever it may be. There's absolutely professionals in each of those different areas that are equipped to work with your teenager, but also have the passion for it. You know, it takes a very special person to want to connect with a teenager in that way.
You have to use certain type of language. You have to connect with them. You have to be so genuine and absolutely care about them. And those people are out there. But that's where I would start.
We may be a little crazy, but we are out there.
Right.
I think also what you had said, to circle back to the very beginning, is, you know, we have a tendency to want to go right to the time management and the executive functioning, and to really, again, let's think about the bottom line is the confidence building and the self-esteem and the self-talk. And I feel like those need to be addressed before we can get to the time management and those type of skills, or at least in tandem. In tandem, let's make sure that we're doing those and that we're not missing that really core piece.
Agree. 1,000%. And it's why so many strategy only programs don't often stick very long, because we haven't changed the beliefs. And what I'll find is that oftentimes there are programs that will work with your teen, or somebody's working with your teen, they'll teach a strategy, they'll start to use it, and then the accountability is not there. The let's come back to the drawing board and say, how is this working? You know, that the planner that we chose, how's that working for you? It's great. That's amazing. It's not working so great. Okay. What's getting in the way? How can we make this easier? How can we make this fit into your life? You know, it's learning how to manage your time or study is not as simple as, well, here's the planner I got you at Target. Like, it is a process, right? Like, you have to learn how to do it and then tweak the strategy until it fits for you. And sometimes that takes an accountability partner or a mentor or somebody coming back again and again until it's the way you want it.
That is so key right there, Natalie, because I've had kids tell me, you know, I've been given this plan or I've been given this thing, and all it's doing is adding more stress. And the reason I wasn't able to do this is because I'm stressed out. And now I have just one more thing that's not useful to me that I have to do. And it's not solving their problem. It's adding to it. So I think we have to be very careful about working with our kids to make sure, just as you said, to make sure whatever solutions we are helping, providing for them, actually address their needs and fit into their style of learning and their style.
Absolutely.
It's not the kid's fault if the program process doesn't work for them. It's not the right process.
Correct. I mean, the way I organize myself is likely very different than the way you do. We both come up with strategies that work for us. I know exactly what does not work for me. And I know what does work for me, but that's been trial and error. And honestly, years of kind of refining the systems that work for me. So it's getting in that practice of doing just that, figuring out what systems work for you and what don't. And of course, it changes. You know, the strategies that we use to organize ourselves and manage our time in middle school are likely very different than what you're going to use in college. So they have to kind of grow and evolve with you as your life circumstances are changing and when you're in different chapters of your life.
Yeah, exactly. Very important. And I think that teaches them the growth mindset right there by being adaptable and helping them be adaptable. They're learning, oh, just because this doesn't work for me doesn't mean something's wrong with me. It means I need to keep exploring and finding. And if this no longer works for me, that just means I need to find a new method. And that's growth mindset.
Exactly.
So Natalie, what is the one big takeaway you want parents to have after this episode?
I would say to really just normalize the fact that the inner critic is real. I mean, it is loud. Everybody has one, but it's very important to figure out where it happens and what it is saying so that you know how to shift that language. Because we both know this, and likely everybody listening knows this, the thoughts we have about ourselves become our beliefs. Yeah. And what we don't want to happen is that those thoughts become their beliefs, and then they start to look for every little example of how those beliefs are true. So I got a B on my math test that I studied really hard for. I must be stupid. Well, now we're going to look for every little example of how we stink at math or we are stupid, and just kind of reinforce that belief. And then we're going to act in a way that is in accordance with that thought. So it is just so important to nip this in the bud early and to know how to do it. Because as we go through the years in high school, the pressure increases, right? The rigor increases, the difficulty increases, the distractions increase. it's something that needs to be addressed sooner rather than later, because it really is a life skill just as important as managing your time or studying effectively.
Absolutely. That is so key. And I think for us parents to be wary of labeling our kids based on a behavior, you know, oh, you're lazy, or oh, you're unmotivated, or you're, because that feeds into their belief system of who they are, and they start finding evidence and living, leaning into that label rather than saying, well, I can still change. Now it's like, well, I am this, so I can't change.
Correct.
So I'm not even going to bother trying.
Yeah, and what's
we
the point?
Kind of, yeah, exactly. I hear that a lot from kids. What's the point? And that's a tough place to be. It's a tough place to conquer, right, for everyone. So Natalie, how do people find you?
The way that most people find me is honestly on Instagram. My handle on Instagram is @LifeSuccessForTeens. And then my website is also www.LifeSuccessForTeens. So either of those places, you can find me and learn more information about what my coaches and I do and how we work with teenagers.
Love it. It sounds so well-rounded and what people need. So thank you so much for that.
My pleasure.
And thanks for joining me today. I appreciate
it. Of course, it was fun. Thank you, Dr. Kim.
And that's a wrap. Thank you, parents, for taking time out of your busy day to listen in. I appreciate you. If you found the episode enlightening, please like, review, and share with a friend navigating the teen years. Until next time, stay curious. Remember, there's always more to the story than what you see.